It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Morning, everyone. Good morning. A little bit of a restless night's sleep last night. Yesterday, I told you about this puppy my girlfriend and I adopted on Saturday. And a cute little guy, but with our other dog, our adult dog, she had a problem with her knee, had ACL surgery a couple of weeks ago. So now it's time to start rehabbing. Our adult dog is a pit. She's a pit bull, and I am not. I've never been a huge fan of pit bulls in my life. Never, as a matter of fact, despised them. My girlfriend, however, has experience owning pits, and she wanted to get a pit. So, about 15 months ago now, we went to a place here in Pahrump, which is an old dog rescue. They have adult dogs. It's a no-kill shelter. They'll keep them forever. Well, the dog that ended up being ours, she was there for 2 years, and hopping around on three legs, had, you know, her left rear leg wouldn't work. So anyhow, we adopted her. She ended up being the sweetest dog I've ever owned in my life. But now with her knee surgery, it's time for doing a little bit of physical therapy. So she needs to swim. So we go to a friend's house and we have her swim. And, this guy, he's actually a real live, honest to God, full-time dog trainer. So, he showed us how to get her to swim because she doesn't much care for water. Just not a breed that cares for water. So he taught us how to, with a couple of long leashes, guide her in the pool so she does laps, you know, up the center and back down and then guide her over to the stairs. So we go over and do that. We learned that on Sunday. We went over and did that yesterday. We'll do it again today. And she's using that leg to full extension, which is good. And then the puppy, who is a lab, we put him in the pool so he can swim because, you know, labs are supposed to dig water and he seems to be good with it. But I think he ingested a little bit of water or something because late yesterday afternoon, he started in with every material you could think of coming out both ends. And then again, it really hit last night at about 2 a.m., of course, which is exactly when things are supposed to happen. So anyhow, now we have to deal with that. So it was a long night for my girlfriend. I was certainly up for a good couple of hours over the whole deal, but, I can tell you the joys of pet ownership. What I want to do is we got this little lab and I want to turn him into a very good bird dog. And Labrador Retrievers are excellent bird dogs, probably the most popular bird dog in the world. And it was a little bit of a struggle last night, but it's all good. We had Joe from Illinois call up yesterday and want to know about a good gear bag sized multi-tool for Allen wrenches. And this is the one that I use. It's called the Gorilla Grip by Bondhus. B-O-N-D-H-U-S. Gorilla Grip by Bondhus. B-O-N-D-H-U-S. And the model that I keep in my bag is model number 12591. 12591. And you can just put that into any search engine, click on the shopping link, and order that from anywhere. They're $7 or $8. So that's the one that I've used in my shooting bag for years. If it works for me, it probably will work for you pretty well. So now that we've got that out of the way, we're going to get on to some shooting and gun-related topics. We'll have that right after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
All right, guys, I get a lot of email every day, but I got one specifically yesterday I thought was worth bringing up here live on the show. So I'm going to get to it. It says, Bill, this is from a guy named Jeff St. John, spelled G-E-O-F-F. And I had made a comment about some guy who wrote an incredibly ignorant article with the same spelling, and I goofed on his spelling of Jeff, not meaning to tick off everybody else with the name of Jeff. But anyhow, let me get to this letter. It says, Bill, just so you don't think I am one of those people you colorfully describe with such inflammatory adjectives here, here's my address, my phone number, and thanks to this note, you have my email. Jeff St. John, he's of Springfield, Missouri. He says, I was really underwhelmed with you in Top Shot when I first saw it. Your treatment of the kid, meaning Kelly, while understandable at the outset because of his insensitivity, was inexcusable when the kid tried to apologize. If all of us took that approach, especially with you, you would find yourself entirely isolated on this planet. Now, this is coming because of the ending of episode 3 of Top Shot. And when Kelly came on here on, what was it, June 24th, I believe it was, we talked about episode 3 and how the editing was incredibly creative by the people at the History Channel. And really, I was ticked off at Kelly from late morning one day through the night. And then when I woke up the next morning, it was done. We were cool. But through the editing, it looked like I was ticked off at this kid for, you know, 3 solid days, which was not what happened. So continuing with the letter. It said, I decided before writing you a nasty email that I would find out more about you and listen to some of your program. It was interesting and enlightening. You can be articulate and seemed to some extent to be more interested in truth and facts than just looking for things to support your preconclusions. He said the broadcast of July 7th was very informative, and I have referred anyone to that anyone that I know to it who has seen you on Top Shot and has had a problem with you. And I don't know what the off the top of my head what the 7-7 broadcast was. He says, I also listened to some of the other broadcasts, and it helped me greatly to understand why you are so successful in rubbing so many people wrong when you were the one that was initially wrong. Respectfully, you have a bit of a temper, as I do. Yes, I do. And you have a very descriptive vocabulary that tends to get into name-calling, and walking in grace with others doesn't seem to be your forte. Translated, you are easily pissed off, say your piece, and can't relent until you cool off. It's exactly right. If you don't think this is a problem, you may want to have a long talk with some close friends who will be honest with you. Ultimately, those idiots at Top Shot were able to edit things the way that way because they made it, you made it easy for them. Okay. Just so you understand, Jeff, thank you very much for this letter, by the way. You're a very, very bright guy. Very bright guy. Very intelligent. And very intuitive. Now, I know that I am this way. I know I am the type of guy that I get pissed, I'll say my piece, I'll cool off, and things will be fine. It's the way I've always been. And that's part of my DNA, part of my personality, part of what makes me run. And you can't change that any more than you can change a left-handed person into a right-handed person. You're just not going to be completely successful. I don't fight my nature when it comes to the way that I get around. That's just the way I am. And part of that is the reason that I was offered to come into radio, because of the way that I articulate myself and the way that I carry on. So, I do understand it. And quite honestly, if I thought it was a huge hindrance in my life, I would probably look at trying to switch from being left-handed to right-handed or vice versa, but I'm not. I understand it, and pretty much everybody else who knows me does as well. And quite honestly, I probably have more friends than I really need because I'm constantly busy doing one thing or another with all these different friends that I've got. Continuing on, he says, on one of your other programs, you insulted the guy who spells his name like I do, like he had a choice in the matter. Well, you're absolutely right. He says, then you went on to say he really didn't have anything to add to the conversation because he had never been a police officer, just had a family member who was one. He says, does this mean that only police officers can criticize police officers? Yeah, the guy showed some ignorance and seemed to be a lapdog for law enforcement. But your reasoning that no one else, but by your reasoning, no one else can have an opinion on anything that they don't have work experience in. Okay, we need to back the truck up just a little bit here, Jeff. The guy that wrote the article mentioned nothing but a bunch of lapdog law enforcement sort of statements. And at the very end, he finished with his name, what he does, and then that he has a relative who happens to be a member of that police department, which I found to be incredibly ridiculous. Unless he signs off every article he writes on every subject with that. What he was trying to do was lend his statement some form of credibility because he has some relative, be it blood or extended, who knows, who's a member of Las Vegas Metro. He tried to lend credibility to his statements with that, which is why I attacked it. Everybody has the ability to criticize or support any topic. In this case, it was police officers. Police officers involved in a homicide of an innocent man, a man that had broken no laws. Not a single law had been broken. And this guy was shot and killed by three on-duty cops. All right? Anybody can criticize it. However, the more you know about carrying guns, the more you know about being a cop, the more you know about all of these things, lends more credibility to what you have to say. And I am very well able to criticize the guy's article because I shop at that Costco. I pack my gun at that Costco. I know more about packing and shooting and shot placement and things than the vast majority of the people out there, which would make me an expert in that way. Plus, I used to be a cop on the very same department, and I understand their procedures. Therefore, I can tell you quite honestly, I am able to pick apart the guy who wrote that article's article, the author of that article. I'm able to pick it apart and demonstrate what sheer ignorance he came from, which was my entire message when I did that. He says, you lose the high ground when you insult others or base your arguments on incomplete logic. I'm not so sure I've done any incomplete logic, but I can understand the latter. That's just my way. And it's also a little entertaining on the radio. The show's supposed to be a little entertaining. I believe you were right in most of the things you disagreed with him on. You just took a couple of shots at your own foot before you shot down his arguments. He says, I have given my opinion on several public forums about police incidents in our area. Sometimes in support of the police, sometimes not. It's amazing how many times when you disagree with a former police officer, he will go to ridicule a person who doesn't have a law enforcement background, and heaven forbid you bring up a family member who is a law enforcement officer, almost word for word, the way you did. Well, maybe you should see that there is a trend, and it is valuable to know thy enemy. If you're going to criticize someone, Sun Tzu, Art of War, know thy enemy. If you're going to be critical, you should know at least a thing or two. Which is why I say that anti-gunners really don't have any sort of credibility whatsoever to stand there and talk about anti-gun when they don't know anything about guns. You think Richard Daley's ever gone through a training class and learned how to shoot? What about Michael Bloomberg? You think he's ever actually gone through a training class and learned how to shoot and goes to the range on a regular basis or even competes? Probably not. Jeff St. John continues with, I do wish you well and listen from time to time. I think you do a fairly good job on your program. I also hope you get a handle on the name calling. It reveals a small person inside. You know what? Here's a little bit of name calling. I do as I do and make no apologies for me being the way I am. That's just the way I am. Everybody doesn't have to like it. Not everybody likes me. Not everybody likes you. Not everybody likes everybody else listening. He says, with your intelligence, your ability to clearly articulate, you can disagree without being a self-righteous ass. Sometimes I like being a self-righteous ass, Jeff St. John. P.S., he says, I kind of liked your statement about when someone won't shut up, exercising the First Amendment right. One man could punch the other in the mouth to shut them up. Sounds good, was the way that I grew up. But if we try that, it's now battery, and it's a lot of a lot of times idiots who won't shut up has no problem pressing charges. You're right. It was a theoretical punching them in the mouth, just making a point that not everybody understands that the right to your First Amendment exercising of your rights is with other people. It's with the government. Stay tuned, guys. Jeff, thanks very much for the letter. Stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. We'll be right back.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
Guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and Two Way Radio are back.
All right, guys, welcome back. Calling in on line one, we have Sid from Indiana. Sid, welcome to Two Way Radio.
Hey, Guy, how are you this morning?
I'm good. It's actually Bill, but what's up, man?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I said Guy.
As in, like, dude?
Yeah.
I thought you meant Guy is in my name.
Oh, no.
What's happening?
Well, I tell you what, I'm calling in a favor, and the favor, not to you, but calling in a favor that was made to me 22 years ago by Mitch McConnell, believe it or not.
Okay.
And I'm politically agnostic at this point. Which is just a step above what I probably will become. But he was a friend of my father's in Kentucky, a good friend. And he told me to call him should I need him, and I never intended to. But I've got a list of things, and he promised that he would call me, and I never believed that he would. But I got a hold of his aide today. His aide told me that he keeps his promises. We'll see. But if you don't mind...
Yeah, I'd like please, to, get to the point.
Yes, sir. To read all the bills and to write all the bills that the new Congress will deal with. To repeal the Patriot Act, to eliminate the EPA, to eliminate the TSA, to avoid secrecy at all costs. Secrecy is our enemy. And to repeal Public Law 100-85, which was out of the Congress of 1997, which is what gives them the right to spray us with chemtrails.
Now, are these things that you would like to see the new Congress, if
yes.
provided Republicans come? These are things you'd like to see them do?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely, you were right on point with all of these and many, many more. I mean, let's not forget Obamacare.
He's going to be running things.
He who? He.
Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell, okay.
He's going to be calling me today.
Oh, good.
And I'm going to be telling him what I just told you.
Well, excellent. And see if you can get Obamacare reversed, please, and cap and trade eliminated, and also see if you could get him to get some influence inside the Senate to finally bring up the the anti-gun 1997 treaty that has never been ratified, never brought up for a vote, to bring it up so they can finally shoot it down and it never reads its ugly head again.
Well,
those,
you know,
are requests by me.
You know, he was there in the Senate when all this was going on. Mitch McConnell was, you know, right there in the middle of it all.
Mm-hmm.
So he's well aware of it. I don't know if he's a globalist or not. I don't trust any of these people.
No, they're untrustworthy.
I'm a believer that if they say jump, I duck.
Well said, Sid. Very well said.
Now, my friend, I will let you go on about your show. I know that you have important things to tell the people. I call you my brother. I listen to you every day.
Great. Thanks, Sid. I appreciate it.
Okay, God bless.
God bless you, too. Take care. Bye. All right, guys, there's been a movement around the entire country when it comes to news media talking about pro-Second Amendment Democrats and how they're looking to retain a lot of seats. I am incredibly suspicious of this and find this to be a terrible way of trying to go about things. I find this to be an absolute hoax, and I find this to be highly, highly suspicious. Because there are a lot of single-issue voters out there. There are people that will vote specifically on religion. There are people who will vote specifically based on your stance on abortion. There are people who will vote specifically on your stance when it comes to the Second Amendment, and so on. A single-issue voter is generally a smaller-minded person. Please do not be a single-issue voter. Here's the thing with the Democrats. On a regular basis, they will vote in violation of their authority granted by the Constitution and pass unconstitutional legislation. They will also trollop and stomp on your other rights, while then later saying, oh, but I'm for your Second Amendment rights. You cannot pick and choose your rights. You can't do it. You cannot just pick and choose. Here's a bit of an article. It says, with the midterms looming large in a year where incumbents are expected to take a beating at the polls, many Democratic candidates are favoring gun rights, aiming to win endorsements or positive ratings from pro-Second Amendment groups. Well, you're absolutely right. That's what they're trying to do to save their own butts. This is emergency mode. Do not become a single-issue voter. Do not be fooled by the Democrats rallying together, trying to be smart enough to say, well, you know what? Let's come out as pro-Second Amendment. You know, after we get reelected and get in there, we can do what we want. But let's just get back in there for starters. It's the same idea of, let's just pass Obamacare. It doesn't have to be perfect. We can pass all kinds of legislation to make it the way we want, the same way that our forefathers did, with the whole Federal Reserve system and the taxing, as we continue to do. Do not buy into this. Do not vote for these guys. Because even if they are pro-Second Amendment, they're still going to squash your First Amendment, right? See if they voted for the Disclosure Act and let that do your talking. We'll be right back.
Listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Somebody get a silencer for this guy. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Turn up your speakers and please listen closely. If I've addressed this a couple of times, I'm going to address it a third time, and I'm going to address it in its entirety this time, because evidently the Cliff Notes hasn't really had the effect that we were hoping for. Somebody called in a couple of segments back and asked if I knew anything about the signing of the Small Arms Treaty by Hillary Clinton. Now, here's the email that has been circulating the internet that's been getting passed along and passed along. I've seen this thing probably at least 40 times. Here's what it says. While you were watching the oil spill, the New York failed terrorist bombing, and other critical crises, Hillary Clinton signed the Small Arms Treaty with the UN. And then, and that was under a headline that says, Obama finds legal way around the Second Amendment and uses it. If this passes, there could be war. Okay, that's the way it grabs your attention. It goes on by saying, on Wednesday, and of course this thing's a good couple of months old, the Obama administration took its first major steps in a plan to ban all firearms in the United States. The Obama administration intends to force gun control and a complete ban on all weapons for U.S. citizens through the signing of international treaties with foreign nations. By signing international treaties on gun control, the Obama administration can use the U.S. State Department to bypass the normal legislative process in Congress. Once the U.S. government signs these international treaties, all U.S. citizens will be subject to those gun laws created by foreign governments. These are laws that have been developed and promoted by organizations such as the United Nations and individuals such as George Soros and Michael Bloomberg. The laws are designed and intended to lead to the complete ban and confiscation of all firearms. The Obama administration is attempting to use tactics and methods of gun control that will inflict major damage on our Second Amendment before U.S. citizens even understand what has happened. Obama can appear before the public and tell us that he does not intend to pursue any legislation in the U.S. that would lead to the new gun control laws while cloaking in secrecy his Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is committing the U.S. to international treaties and foreign gun control laws. Does that mean Obama is telling the truth? What it means is that there will be no publicized gun control debates in the media or votes in Congress. We'll wake up one morning and find that the United States has signed a treaty that prohibits firearms and ammunition manufacturers from selling to the public. We will wake up another morning to find that the U.S. has signed a treaty that prohibits any transfer of firearms ownership. And then we will wake up yet another morning and find that the U.S. has signed a treaty that requires U.S. citizens to deliver any firearm they own to the local government collection and destruction center or face imprisonment. This has happened in other countries, past and present. This is not a joke or a false warning. As sure as government health care will be forced on us by the Obama administration through whatever means necessary, so will gun control. Read this Reuters article and please forward this message to others who may be concerned about the direction in which our country is headed. This is a very serious matter. Silence will lead us to socialism. Now, many of you may have gotten this same email. Let's talk about this. Now, this whole piece that I just read, this whole email, talking about how the United States having entered into a United Nations Small Arms Treaty that provides some legal way around the Second Amendment and that is going to result in a complete ban on all weapons for U.S. citizens is completely false in all of its claims. First of all, Hillary Clinton has not signed, nor has the U.S. Senate ratified any U.N. Small Arms Treaty. In fact, it hasn't even been drafted. The putative United Nations Arms Treaty that is referenced in the Reuters article, if you actually ever clicked on that and read it, it really has nothing to do with restricting the sale or ownership of guns within the U.S. The aim of any potential UN small arms treaty, as they've discussed, there's supposed to be a conference coming up on it later this year. The aim of that is to combat, as they put it, to combat the illicit international trade of small arms by tightening regulations of and setting international standards for the import, export, and transfer of conventional weapons in order to close the gap in existing regional and national arms export control systems that allow weapons to pass onto the illicit market. Even if such a treaty came to pass, U.S. rights and laws regarding the sale and ownership of guns would still apply within the U.S. because this is an international-based treaty. Treaties cannot subvert the Constitution of the United States, nor her amendments, nor the judicial interpretations of the Constitution and her amendments. Treaties cannot have that effect. The most they could do is affect direct commerce when it comes to international commerce. That's it. It cannot affect anything in the state. Imagine this. We have all of these Firearms Freedom Acts in different states around the country. A treaty couldn't possibly affect those. The states could just simply make their own 10th Amendment statement and do their own Firearms Freedom Acts, totally negating any of this. Which is not, it wouldn't affect us anyhow. Now, also so you know, the president, or the, I guess the person sitting in the Oval Office, how about that, cannot enact a complete ban on all weapons for U.S. citizens by signing any international treaty with any foreign country. Okay? And the Secretary of State's signature doesn't mean diddly. The right to keep and bear arms is guaranteed in the Constitution by the Second Amendment, and in the 1957 case of Reed versus Covert, and in the 2008 case of DC versus Heller, and in the 2010 case of McDonald versus Chicago. All right? And what the Reed versus Covert case said was the Supreme Court established that the Constitution supersedes all international treaties ratified by the U.S. Senate. And furthermore, the rest of Congress cannot be bypassed in any such treaty process. All treaties have to be ratified by a vote of two-thirds of the Senate. Two-thirds. There's no legal way around the Second Amendment other than to pass a new amendment or maybe through another constitutional convention. But as it stands, that is not the case. So, when it comes to this, it is a false alarm. There have been several large pro-gun groups who have helped to put this false belief out there, trying to jump on the bandwagon and hope that you will send money to them so that they can help fight this. At the UN level, guys, there is nothing that we the people can do. It is an international organization comprised of different national governments. And those national governmental representatives go to this international body, international organization, and discuss things and do things. Then it needs to go back to each individual country. And each individual country has their own method of ratifying a treaty. In our country, the Senate needs to approve it by a measure of two-thirds. After it's endorsed by the President. After. So, just so you understand that. There's nothing can be done at this point. Nothing we can do at this point. If a treaty is signed, if the U.S. signs on to the treaty, which is not necessarily something that any country has to do. If it's an international treaty, you don't have to be a part of it. Plus, you can abdicate yourself from it at any future date. Now, we've abdicated ourselves from several treaties. When George W. Bush came into office, he abdicated himself, the United States, I should say, from an anti-ballistic missile treaty signed with the former Soviet Union back in the 70s, dealing with missiles pointing in Europe. Yeah, we're going to back out of that one. That's all you got to do. Back out of it. But to get into it is a tougher process. So if all of this were to go down and it got all the way to where it sat at the Senate level, that is when we can do something. So save your pennies until then. Okay? Save them up. Now, I want to get back to this whole thing about Democrats doing their very best to become pro-gun. The University of New Hampshire has a professor of politics by the name of Andrew Smith. Now, he says Democrats started moving away from strong anti-gun stances in the 90s when many of the party blamed the issues on massive political losses in Congress because in 94 when they signed what they called the assault weapons ban. He says, I think it started with the 1994 elections where a lot of Democrats believe it was the NRA's involvement in that election which caused the Democrats to lose the House and the Senate, so they backed off of the issue of anti-gun. I don't think it had much to do with the NRA. What happened was, about this time, it was actually September, it was 2 months before the actual election, about 7 weeks before the election, they passed the, what they called the assault weapons ban, limiting magazine capacities, taking away a lot of features of some guns, and disallowing the import of some guns. And the law was for 10 years. A huge slew of Democrats who voted for that all lost their re-election bid. It was the single largest re-election bid loss in the history of the U.S. Congress. Both houses. That didn't have anything to do with the NRA. It had to do with you guys trying to do gun control here in this country. That's what it had to do. Now, the NRA is by far the most powerful pro-gun lobby in the country. It spends massive amounts of money to protect the rights to bear arms and donates a lot of money to candidates and political action committees. And while Republicans receive the majority of the money that the NRA spends with endorsements, over the last 10 years, the NRA has dramatically increased funding to a lot of different Democratic candidates. Now, gun ownership in this country, amid labor unions, folks, runs from a low of 48% in California to a high of 60, 70, and 80% in states like Missouri, Tennessee, and West Virginia. In the election in 2000, half of these union members had a firearm in their home, voted for George Bush over Al Gore based on gun issues that cost Al Gore the presidency. So just because a union gives an endorsement doesn't mean that everybody who's a member of that labor union will vote for the person that the union themselves endorses. What that means is when you get an endorsement, they're going to try to get the votes of the union members, and we're going to give you money. That's what endorsement means. Now, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, which is a nonpartisan group that tracks political spending, during the 2002 midterm election cycle, the NRA put 8% of their federal campaign contributions towards Democrats. This election cycle, Democrats are receiving 26%, or slightly more than three times what they had gotten. What I'm telling you is don't be fooled. Do not be fooled. Now, we just got a call from Indiana. We get calls from Indiana on a regular basis from one of our affiliates there. The Democratic Senate candidate, Brad Ellsworth, who is a former sheriff, may win the NRA's endorsement over the Republican Dan Coats. This is where I see a problem with it. Now, and also, the slow political shift has frustrated some Democrats that have long fought for tougher gun laws, like New York Congresswoman Carolyn McCarthy, whose husband was killed in 1993 by a gunman he randomly fired on a commuter train. She wishes fellow Democrats would fight the pressure exerted by the pro-gun lobby. She believes that they are actually pressuring people to change their minds. Here's what Carolyn McCarthy says. She says, "They've been very open about saying, Carolyn, if the NRA comes against a bill, I gotta vote with the NRA. They're not going to take that chance. I understand that." That's what McCarthy said of her Democratic colleagues. She says, "Does it bother me? Of course it bothers me, because I'm not trying to take away anyone's right to own a gun." Actually, you're trying to restrict their right to own a gun. And you may not see that. You may not have the intellectual level to see that, Carolyn McCarthy. But that's what's going on. So this is what bothers me about this Brad Ellsworth in Indiana. Okay, being a former sheriff may win the NRA's endorsement over Republican Dan Coats. Okay, but here's the question. Where does Brad Ellsworth stand on the rest of the rights? Now, the NRA's specifically on Second Amendment. That's it, just the Second Amendment. That's all he's worried about. I'm sorry, all that the NRA is worried about. You have to look at the rest of the rights. A bunch of Democrats in the House just voted for the Disclosure Act, which is a huge flying middle finger in the face of everyone's First Amendment rights. Don't fall for this hogwash. Don't do it. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break. Take me back.
The American Dream, founded by men of honor, men of a creed once shared by most, and now all but forgotten. Men who risked their lives and perpetrated the most egregious acts of treason in history to create the United States of America. The Founding Fathers recognized that tyranny reigns over unarmed men, and they vowed to never allow that to happen here in the United States of America. Politicians of a lesser ilk have tried to subvert the right to self-protection, to protect your family and property. Until now, announcing America's Victory Shoots, the largest patriotic shooting event in generations, celebrating the Supreme Court's decision in McDonald versus Chicago, restoring the rights of all Americans across the land, from sea to shining sea, right in the backyard of Chicago itself. America's Victory Shoot is for Americans who share the creed of our founding fathers. Join your countrymen in a celebratory weekend of shooting events and training for the protection of you and your family at the patriotic event of a generation. There's limited space, so go to victoryshoot.org to find out more and sign up today. As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
Welcome back, everyone. This story out of Phoenix, Arizona. Yesterday was the day that the immigration law, SB 1070, went into effect in Arizona. And let's see, in 2 days, is that right? Yesterday? I believe it was the 26th. In 2 days is when they go to constitutional carry, where you don't need any special governmental permission to exercise your Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. And you can pack a gun and pack it concealed in Arizona without having to ask the government permission to exercise that right. Hear ye. Yay. So, Governor Brewer, attorneys for Governor Brewer, in Arizona, have asked a federal judge to throw out the U.S. State Department's challenge to Arizona's new immigration law, which is SB 1070. The governor's lawyer said on Monday that the federal government hasn't shown it has suffered actual harm from the law, and instead, the federal government has based its claims purely on speculation. Now, the federal government, hold on. I have a sneeze coming on, and I'm live on the air. It's just tough. Okay, he says, continues by saying, the federal government says the state law is trumped by the federal law and that it has hurt U.S. relations with Mexico. It's also expected to take effect Thursday. Okay, so yeah, in 2 days it takes effect, on the 28th, 29th. Attorneys for Brewer say Mexico's disapproval of the law doesn't make it unconstitutional. U.S. District Judge Susan Bolton is considering requests by the Justice Department, and a Phoenix police officer and civil rights groups to put the law on hold. Okay. The Phoenix police officer that's getting involved in this is the type of person supposed to be getting done by doing what he's told to do. He, she, it, whatever. Whoever this Phoenix police officer is. Why they're standing up and say, oh, I don't want to have to do this. You know, it's part of your job. And something tells me somewhere there's a little bit of a contract that you signed when you got up on it, so be quiet yourself. Civil rights groups are going to get hot and heavy on anything that deals with anything. Unless you have free, open borders, there is no borders. We're going to call this a border, but it's not going to make any difference. We want it open, like Europe. Other than that, civil rights groups are going to be all over it. So, for the state of Arizona to go up and have to defend themselves with federal monies, I hope to God they ask for attorney's fees. And I hope they can get them. If the federal government is going to allow, there's other laws in Montana that went in, in 2008. The law in California is much more restrictive than the one in Arizona. It's just that they don't enforce it. But it is on the books. Stay out of Arizona's business. Please.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you.
Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2WayRadio.com. I will die.